You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 119 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And we are welcome today. This is becoming a tradition for the first ever episode. Wait, the second ever? Episode of After Ballers on the Pelton Cast. We are joined today for the second year in a row by the famous Cousin Katie.
Thank you for having me, but not thank you for how you've treated ballers the past year.
Wow. Oh, wow. Well, I thought you were going to say the tradition is having the famous Cousin Katie on to help us in our various food brackets. And I was also going to say, it's amazing that you were asked back after what happened last year with Unita versus Loretta's matchup. And of course, by you, I mean Tristan.
Oh, man.
All right.
You were saving that for so long.
That was good.
I did think of that. Okay. We got a lot to get into, so let's get into it. Starting with a reminder that we are now less than 2 weeks away from the Pelton Cast live show at Barboza on Wednesday, August 29th. Earlier tonight, you were unable to join us, but I met up with our friends, Tasteful Profanity, a Beast Pod production, to discuss the show, to do planning. And you were going to be amazed at the intricate choreographed dance routines that we have
planned.
Oh my God.
I don't know if I'm excited or afraid now.
A little of both, probably. A little of both.
Wait, this actually happened?
No, that didn't happen.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, man.
But we ate tacos, Chukis. It was delicious. And we did talk about things to talk about during the Seahawks season preview.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really had to meet for that one. offense, defense, punting.
Yes. We're going to devote like 25 minutes to Michael Dixon and maybe even John Ryan. He'll get some love there too.
But again, at the live show, tickets are still available at the live show Wednesday, August 29th. At Barboza, as part of the Numos Complex on Capitol Hill, here is what you can expect at the Pelton Cast live show. The first ever episode of Traitor Bros.
Yes.
What?
The crowning of Seattle's... Did you not know about that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Was this are on you just, the podcast?
Are you finding this
yeah,
out? Wow. You're really behind on these Pelton Casts, aren't you? The crowning of Seattle's best burrito / taco with third Pelton brother Jake One. Talking Taco Time live with special guest DJ Infrared.
Just confirmed that. Excited to announce that.
Wow.
Shenanigans.
Whimsy.
Surprises.
I'm hoping for a lot of surprises.
Have we told people? Come hungry to the show.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I can't say anything more than that.
Giving away the surprises.
But just don't eat beforehand. Yeah.
We're giving away the whimsy. to be honest, come hungry to the show.
Yeah, it's just important advice to give people.
Okay.
Honestly, the Pelton Cast live show, we are feeding people so much, we are going to rename it a pop-up.
Oh. Did you have that planned? Was that spur of the moment?
I thought about it earlier.
That was spur of the moment. Okay.
Is there more?
Well, I was just going to get to the other bit of business we have this week. Did you have something more on the live show? No?
No.
Okay. The other bit of business, let's call this the last call for our fantasy football league so we can get set and start preparing to draft. We are currently at 17 people, so we do need a few more to get us up to enough for two leagues. We had 20 last year. I think we can match or even beat that. We've got a lot of new the listener.
Really?
Yeah, the listener who had not previously reached out to us, so that was cool to hear from the listener.
That's mm-hmm. exciting.
Yeah.
Hey, we found that playing fantasy football with us one time is not a satisfying event.
Yeah.
There are a lot of new people this year.
Last year's returners, not as interested in. It was not everything it cracked up to be.
Oh, man.
Speaking of cracked, should we crack open this beer?
Here we go.
Okay, we have here the Pike Citrus Summer Ale. And I did want to read quickly about it on the back here. It's described as light, citrusy, and refreshing. And Pike advises to pair it with summer salads, barbecue, and good times.
Good times.
So I guess we're going 1 for 3 on the pod tonight, huh?
With the barbecue? You
know, the good times.
There might be some salad around. I don't know. The Centennial Cascade hops dry hopped with lemon drop. So we'll be interesting to see what that tastes like.
So whenever we have Pike beer or I see Pike beer, it makes me think of one thing because their logo is really, honestly, pretty much an interpolation of the Rainier logo in the shape of a P. And I've got two words for Pike Brewing Company. Cease and desist.
That's three words.
And also the way you pronounce it was like four words. Because you made de-insist into different words.
Oh my god.
Full page ad. Cease and desist.
Copyrighted material
here. This is... to take you inside the podcast, Tristan was sleeping before we started here. So
fresh.
His counting may not be so strong right now.
No.
Guys, should we have a toast to season 4 of Ballers on HBO?
There we go.
I thought you were going to do something respectful and like pour one out for Aretha Franklin or something like that.
But... No, RIP to Aretha, okay. Indeed. But, you know, we're looking for something to toast. You have, there's been various seasons of Ballers on HBO.
It tastes like litigiousness.
The critically acclaimed second season of Ballers on HBO. I forget what the third season was. What was the third season?
I can't remember exactly.
I wanted it to be the Emmy Award nominated season.
There
third
we
season
go.
Of Ballers on HBO, but I don't know. Did that happen?
No, I don't think so.
Almost certainly not.
Okay.
All right, but what about the fourth season? You have a name for that. Are you scrolling up in the G-chat to remember what you said?
Don't worry about it.
He's really bringing it tonight.
I tell you what, I'm not seeing it at all.
I believe it was the unwanted.
The unwanted and unwarranted.
Yeah. But still entertaining.
Yet somehow satisfying fourth season of Ballers on HBO.
Well, with that in mind, it's time for a little segment we like to call After Ballers.
Dun, dun, dun. You're going to play the music,
that's
right?
That's pretty close, though.
That's all you need to do is just play that part as the intro to After Ballers.
It was the premiere of the fourth season. There will be some light spoilers in the unlikely event that you somehow do not want Ballers on HBO spoiled for you. We'll put in the post note when you can skip ahead to because we have ceased this interminable segment.
Skip to the end.
Yeah, in that case.
I would like to know how many people actually watch Ballers on HBO. How many of the listener?
Yeah, maybe reply to us on Twitter if you listen, if you watch Ballers on HBO. Takeaways from this episode in which the setting changes from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, California.
First of all, I just want to talk a little bit about how last time I came on and I was like upset at you guys for abandoning Ballers.
I mean, that could be almost any time you've been on were upset about it.
But then I have to confess that after coming on the podcast to yell at you guys, I did not watch another episode of Ballers on HBO.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you could be honest about that with us. I accept your apology.
The other thing that I thought was funny is I didn't know that Ballers on season 4 was on until Michael Che from SNL had a post on Instagram, and you should follow his Instagram if you don't, where he says...
He needs the shout-out from the podcast. A little bump. Give him the podcast bump.
Wait, The Rock has a TV show? That doesn't make sense. He makes $50 million a movie. Okay, so Michael Che is hosting this year's Emmys.
Correct.
He did not know that the show Ballers on HBO was a thing until like 2 days ago.
A pretty good sign that Ballers on HBO was not nominated for an Emmy. Number one. Number two, again, to go behind the pod, I like that Katie, because of the fact that she does not have a laptop or a tablet in front of her.
No,
she has notes, this tweet, handwritten on a piece of notebook paper.
Pages of notes about the unwanted and unwarranted, yet somehow satisfying fourth season of, I've woken up now, of Ballers on HBO. You have no notes about anything else.
It's just Ballers.
It's literally been pages front to back.
And then you have to highlight the important part.
Highlighted part.
That's accurate. Okay. You know what? We need to post a photo of this on Instagram. That's going to have to go on the gram.
No one will be able to read it anyway, so it won't matter.
The best part about that quote is, and this is the way that I like to imagine it, because it is very baffling that The Rock is still doing this TV show.
Yes.
Is that I like to imagine that this is like The Rock's passion project.
It's like his art.
He's like, this story needs to be told. Every year, no matter what else I have going on, no matter how successful of a movie star I am.
No matter how many Fast and Furious sequels they make.
Because he was equally as famous when the show started.
It's true.
It was shocking from the beginning. And we're just lucky that he blessed us with this story.
Somehow satisfied.
He just needs it for his presidential campaign. He needs this.
It's going to slowly pivot.
Yeah.
This is the political season.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't see much sign of that in the first episode of Ballers on HBO, where Spencer Strassmore, The Rock's character, and Joe, I forget his last name, even though I heard it last night on the when Tristan was watching
Rob
season
Corddry.
Three. Well, yes, that's his the actor's name, of course.
That's all I know.
They head out to Los Angeles, where they meet for like 5 minutes with Calais Campbell.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Maybe even less than that.
The athletes that they have on the show are like, they're never star athletes. And I feel like you learn like the slightest snippet of information about them, because in no world would you know anything about Charles Suggs or Calais Campbell beforehand.
I'm sorry, like, that's T-Sizzle to you.
Exactly. This is all we know. Here are the things that I know about Charles Suggs. NFL player, T-Sizzle. That's it.
Two Achilles injuries. I'll throw in number three. Yes. But Calais Campbell barely on screen in this episode, because we needed to see more of Russell Brand, like all of his backside.
I mean, I think this was a role that he was born to play, though. Like, it was perfect for him.
I never thought to myself, I want indoor need Russell Brand in Ballers on HBO. Just, that was never a consideration for
me. In the Ballers universe, Calais Campbell is famous enough to play himself, but Russell Brand is not.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point. All right. Do we want to talk anything?
Russell Brand's character. If I have to pick some nits from the episode.
Oh no.
Russell Brand's character. He's playing somebody who like runs an esports company, right?
Not esports. It's X Games.
Okay, esports, action sports.
Yes.
Right. And I feel like they couldn't quite figure out exactly what to make him, because he's a little bit bro-y, but then he was talking about like punk music and like Warped Tour or something, and I feel like they couldn't exactly nail who the character was, but it was just like some sort of complicated like amalgam of like sort of on the fringe people who may live in California.
His character was also problematic in a Me Too environment.
Oh no.
Oh, I totally missed that.
You missed that? It was pretty obvious.
I had a hard time following the show, to be honest. I wasn't paying that bit of attention.
Had you just woken up from a nap at the time you watched Ballers on
HBO?
No,
I have no excuse.
Okay, what else do you have in your extensive notes here?
Okay, my extensive notes. The part I did watch is that it was shocking to me that Rob Corddry, whatever his name is, Joe, yes, did not know that his longtime business partner had an older brother who was a quarterback at USC. Yes. And then who jumped off a bridge. Like, if you're going in business with someone, you Google them. And if you Google them, it's going to come up that he has a brother.
There's like three or four parts about this that are shocking. Because the central emotional impact of the episode, the story that needed to be told, that The Rock felt in his soul, was that Spencer Strassmore had an older brother who was a quarterback at USC. And then the pressures of playing at USC... I'm not sure if this was like the impact of playing football on mental health storyline.
We'll see whether they come back to this later in the season.
Oh, no.
Flesh that out.
It's never mentioned beforehand and will never be mentioned again. Just comes out of nowhere. And so The Rock hates California. He's like, I don't really like going to, I never want to be here in California.
Just LA. He was fine going to Oakland in season three.
Yeah. Just LA. And the reason is because of the suicide from a bridge that his older brother had. And so we're supposed to believe that at no point did this ever come up in the previous three series or conversations that Joe and Spencer Strassmore had beforehand. This is the first time that he's hearing of it. Also, Spencer Strassmore is now like a Hall of Fame nominated player.
Which, by the way, I can't remember exactly what role Candace Brewer, or whatever her name is, plays at the NFL, but I guarantee you that your equivalent is not the person who is calling you to inform you that you're a Hall of Fame finalist. Just
catch all the NFL. Anything that could be assigned to the NFL, information to be delivered. But, so if he's... Also, I thought in the first season he was like a pretty good player, but sort of like... knocked out of the NFL relatively early because of injuries.
Yeah, it sounds reasonable.
I thought I remember that, yeah.
And now he's nominated for the Hall of Fame. He doesn't even seem that excited about it.
Maybe a lot of people get nominated for the Hall of Fame. They didn't say that he was a finalist for the Hall of Fame.
That's true.
The last episode, he's going to be wearing that gold jacket.
It does seem likely.
It's going to happen.
It's a Chekhov's gun situation. If you bring up the Hall of Fame, he has to make the Hall of Fame or crushingly fall just short of the Hall of Fame. Those are the only scenarios. You know what I liked about this?
Wait, no, though? I
also have it.
Is that at no point this player, who's a Hall of Fame nominated player, so he'd be a very notable player, nobody did like a story about this.
Yeah.
This would be like every single E60 or whatever. This would be the central story of Spencer Strassmore's career, right?
Yeah, that does seem like
it. Yes, it would come up every time he would be on TV. Like he's overcoming adversity.
I mean, the most important thing that we know, that we knew last year about Shaquille Griffin was Shaquem Griffin's story. There's no way that they just let things go, that the media, ESPN types, would have let this go and never once brought it up. But I love that they just drop it in at the end of this episode.
And then the best part is Rob Corddry trying to sell that it's a shock to him, that it's kind of surprising. Yeah. And he does an interesting job of it.
Are you questioning Rob Corddry's acting choices?
Using the chops that he learned in Children's Hospital.
I don't think it's his fault. I think it's the fact that this was, sprung on him at the last minute. I don't think this was a development that was in the storyline all along. This wasn't in the canon.
They studied this up for 3 years.
No.
What I wanted to note here is that they're considering this acquisition. I guess they're only getting a stake in the Action Sports Agency, not the whole thing. The decision does not seem to have any financial vetting whatsoever. It's strictly based on whether Spencer Strassmore is willing to spend time in Los Angeles. That's the only criteria for the decision.
Oh, my God.
Okay. What else do you have on your notes?
I mean, that's not really, that's all my notes.
Okay, I want to complain about something else.
Oh, wow, there's more.
You've got a lot of notes.
Joe Green, right? Wait, what is his, that's his name?
Charles Green.
Charles Green. Charles Green, promoted to GM of the Los Angeles Rams at the end of last season with 1 year of front office experience under his belt. Which he himself says in an episode of his, like, season three, like, no way they'd be interested in me in GM.
Yeah.
And then he just hired the GM. But somehow, he apparently actually got hired as both president and GM, despite having no business experience whatsoever, because he's immediately told by what I have to assume is the Rams owner.
Very frightening looking guy.
That he has control over all 300 people. The entire organization now reports to him. And every single one of these people fears that they are going to get fired by Charles Green. And then they are all eating lunch in a collective cafeteria.
It's like high school.
Yeah.
Including someone who sells t-shirts at game day. It's eating lunch in the team cafeteria during the week. I have a lot of questions.
Any person who's sort of tangentially related, like contractors, every single person who has anything to do with the organization, they come every single day for lunch at the stadium.
And players apparently are not invited. They don't get to do it.
And they're free to yell at the GM/president.
You're on your own to find food. And then the other thing that's notable here is the owner is watching this all unfold because, as we all know, all sports owners spend their entire day in the team office. But yet they have nothing to do with these decisions about the employment of the employees. They've delegated that completely to the GM. They're just watching it. Like, come on. on. That's not even, it's not even necessary.
You're getting too angry at the logic.
You missed Charles being able to make that like rousing hurrah speech at the end by telling them they were going to save their jobs.
I bet that won't come back to haunt him. That definitely won't come back to haunt him.
Being fired. But I mean, when he gets Ricky Jarrett, which is obviously coming.
Yeah,
that does seem likely.
Things are looking good for the Rams.
All right, anything else on this on episode one of Ballers on HBO?
It's a whirlwind.
Just like kind of wrapping it all up. You know, when Tristan was talking about how it's the unwanted and unwarranted, but still, what was it?
Somehow satisfying?
It's like you come back to that when you hear the theme song, you know, when Drake comes on and you just feel like you're at home. You know what I mean?
You need that gif when Drake hits.
Yeah. That's all I have.
Okay. And this has been After Ballers.
I like this. This is a segment we would have done just for Katie.
We move now to the beginning of our bracket in our search for Seattle's best taco slash burritos.
About this? Yes. Oh, you do? Oh, wow.
Let's see, there's a line there.
Not just Ballers.
We are looking for what tacos slash burrito is going to face off against Tacos Chuki's, the reigning belt holder, in the final. And we start this week with a matchup of, well, it was supposed to be our number one seed, Asadero Prime, versus the number four seed, Fogon Cochina Mexicana. But, as it turns out, I tried to go there for lunch on Tuesday. Big sign on the doors, we are closed due to a moderate kitchen fire. And they will apparently be closed until the end of the month.
I like that they specified the size of the fire.
I did, yeah. I had some questions. What distinguishes it from a small kitchen fire or a large kitchen fire? It's just, it's somewhere in the middle.
They were like, we have to split the difference, because if it was small, you'd be like, why aren't they just open? And if it was large, you'd be like, they are faux gone. Am I right?
Oh, no. So we wish Fogon the best of luck in getting that complete and getting back in business, hopefully by the end of the month or the start of September.
This is an Alaikejo situation. There was no fire at all.
All right. We'll get to that later. But sadly, that does knock Fogon out of the competition here. So we replaced it with the place that actually had a higher score. Or maybe not higher than Fogon, but higher than a couple of the other contenders here. Taqueria El Jim.
The Jim. I like to call it The Jim.
In downtown Renton, which got a 91.5 combined score from us, has a 4.5-star rating on Yelp. And I did kind of want to go back to see, like, wait, were we overrating this place, or is it legitimately this good? So what did we have and what did we think? We'll start with Katie.
I had the Al Pastor tacos and a wet burrito with carnitas.
Interesting.
Yes.
So a couple of things. We've both gone with the California burrito. What did you think of their tacos?
I thought the tacos were really good. I thought the Al Pastor was good. I thought the tortillas they used were good. I don't really know if they were fresh or store-bought. The wet burrito was, I wasn't really like a huge fan of the red sauce, but the meat was like nice and it was well flavored, and the like the tortilla on the burrito had that kind of like, I don't know, it's like the kind of congealed but in a good way. Do you know what I'm talking about? When it's like,
I think I do.
It's been steamed or, you know, properly heated first.
It starts to meld with the contents inside.
Yeah, it just has a certain texture to it. You don't know
where the burrito ends and the tortilla ends and the burrito begins.
So that was really good. Overall, I thought it was very tasty. We were just confused, my husband and I, whether or not it was still Yummy Wan's or if it was a separate place, because they still have a Yummy Wan item on the menu.
It does seem that they just changed the name for some reason and maintained the same ownership as when it was previously and originally Yummy Wan's. Tristan, what did you think?
I didn't go back a second time.
Oh, you didn't go back?
No.
Okay. I did go back a second time, have the California burrito again, and my takeaway was, like, you know, look, this is not Seattle's best tacos slash burrito, but, like, in terms of, like, kind of the, I don't want to say generic, but, you know, the standard burrito category, which the baby burrito at Tacos Chuki's does not fall in, I think this is pretty close to as well as you can do it. It's a good mixture of different items in there, both sour cream and a little bit of avocado or guac to give it some moisture in there, along with the fries, which are pretty solid. And then, as you mentioned, the al pastor meat is good. I don't think it's great, but it's definitely good. So, I was impressed. I think that, it definitely needs to be a more regular part of our rotation, especially since it's relatively near where you guys live here.
Yeah, we've been going to the other taco place in Renton. Do you know what that is, Tristan?
In downtown Renton?
Yeah, you know the one that Ben goes to get the steak fries?
Yeah, that place is good.
But we both agreed that
didn't do very well.
We both agreed that this place is better than that. Yeah, so it's confusing why we keep going to the other place.
They're almost like two different places. Like the one that you're talking about, what is that called now?
I'm pointing it up.
That's almost like a much more traditional Mexican restaurant. And Yummy Juan's is a little bit more in what I'd say like the Chipotle style.
Yeah.
But I do agree that what Yummy Juan's is putting out there is probably better. Oh, El Burrito Loco.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
All right, but that's not our point of contention or point of comparison today. It is, in fact, Taqueria El Jim against Asadero Prime. So how do we feel about that particular matchup? None of us, I don't think, went back to Asadero Prime, but we went
just like to
within the last few weeks.
I've gone several times. Been going there for years.
But recently.
Is that a humble break? I can't tell.
Very weird. I mean, that's the way I felt about the Taqueria El Jim. It's like I've been there many times.
This was only my third time, so I definitely needed to go back.
You guys seem to like the new location, right?
Yeah.
See, I kind of liked the kind of like style of the old one, even though it was in a terrible location. I liked the kind of decor that they had in there. I liked that.
You might see an abandoned shopping cart outside.
You know what? Once you're inside, you were transported to a different place. And
south of the border?
Sinaloa.
Yes.
And I don't like that they took that off the name and made it Asadero Prime.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Also, when we went most recently to the newest location, it was so goddamn hot in there. I don't know if it was hot at 10 o'clock when you guys went.
Isn't that what you want from a Mexican restaurant,
though? It was like...
You feel like the other place wasn't that hot?
Never when we went there, but we maybe didn't go on like one of the hottest days of the summer when we went before.
Like, Tacos Chuki's had to close because of how hot it was in their location on Capitol Hill.
Like, it gets... At like 6 o'clock, middle of the summer, it was... Whew, it was hard to eat. So that was a demerit against it. But that's not getting to the food really at all. That's just my... complaints.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Asadero Prime pretty recently. I think
not
it's
all of us are over there in our gold towers with our air conditioning.
that's definitely true. I think it's safe to say that we are both big fans of Asadero Prime.
Oh, I mean, it's the only real competitor.
It seems likely. So what do you think of the food, Katie?
Oh, I think it's great. I love the platter. I don't think they used to call it the Wagyu platter, but it was just like a steak platter. It reminds me of the meat that you can get at Carceneria El Paisano. Did I say that all wrong? Did I butcher that?
Yes.
Can you say it?
Well, I think I believe it's Carniceria.
Carniceria. There we go. Can you just edit that a lot? Carniceria El Paisano in West Seattle. It's like, very thin, but very tasty. And I like what you guys were saying, that you can put together your own tacos. I also tried for the first time the bone marrow gorditas, which was really good. The mixture of putting the bone marrow inside the little like gordita taco things that they give you was delicious.
Yeah, so I had the straight bone marrow entree or appetizer and was advised that I went wrong and should have had the bone marrow gorditas. Yeah. And I guess I'll have to try that next time, which I'm pretty confident there will be next time.
The Carniceria El Paisano that you mentioned in West Seattle, do they do anything prepared or is it just like a butcher?
They do a marinade on their meats.
But you're
they
cooking it yourself.
Yeah, you have to cook it yourself. Like, it's just like reminds me of the same like sort of...
Yeah. Style.
Style.
Yeah, thinly sliced, the like Mexican, the like Mexican fine meat style. It's excellent.
You're not getting Wagyu, I don't think, at the...
No, probably not.
El Paisano. But they do make tamales. at the El Paisana.
Has anybody ever been to Taqueria La Estacion in Burien?
That's the one that's on Ambom in 152nd?
Yes.
I don't think so.
I tried to go there once, and I think they were closed. I have heard many good things, but sadly, we did not make it there in this competition.
So I don't know if you've noticed this phenomenon. I was having a conversation last week with some people, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're searching for Seattle's best. There was a person, I met the first ever person to have a sort of negative take about Tacos Chukis. The take was that they were raised, they're like part Mexican, and have family who made food similar to what they're putting out at Tacos Chukis. And that's why they don't like it as much, which to me is just like, it reminds you of the food that your abuelita made. It's like, that to me would make me like it even more.
If someone was making food that reminded me, I guess we said that the one dumplings did, of the ravioli, the homemade ravioli that we have at Christmas, like I would go to that place all the time.
Yeah, because tears I could streaming eat
it
down your face.
Without having to make it myself. Although, I watched The Last Ugly Delicious, finally completed the series this week. The dumplings versus Italian stuffed pasta episode, and I'll be damned if that episode didn't make me want to quit everything and start a ravioli company or a restaurant.
But so I was having this conversation with these people, and somebody was like, "Oh, you just can't find good Mexican food in Seattle." I was like, "You have to go to Burien or whatever." Which I was like, "Where?" I was inquiring as to the specific place. And it was like, I don't feel like there was like a solid answer. It was more just like this general feeling that like Burien would have it. These are people who live in Seattle. And I was like, I've been to Burien. There's no place that is on the same continuum.
They're talking about the Azteca?
But Asadero, the original Asadero Sinaloa in Kent is kind of what a person would be talking about. Where it's like, you just can't get good Mexican food in Seattle. You have to go to these kind of like rundown places, more authentic for Mexican food. And that's what Asadero Sinaloa really was when it opened. It was like this person who had kind of a smaller worldview's perspective of what Mexican food is in the south side of Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily need it in the fancy steakhouse seeming kind of environment, but I do want it, and did want it in a larger place than the original, in a more convenient place than the original.
If it was in a fucking cafeteria, I would be stoked. Because there'd be a lot of spots and you could waltz right in.
They need more parking.
Maybe they can go in the Rams cafeteria. Sean's great, so he's already spent too much money bringing back the cookies.
The cookies.
Oh, no, spoiler alert. all right, do we want to cast our votes here? I mean,
there's no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, we're in agreement that it's Asadero Prime.
Yes. I won't ruin it for everyone this time.
You can vote against them.
No, I would not time, pick.
I won't ruin it for everyone.
Yes.
I don't.
Neither of you will ruin it for me. That's the important thing here.
I don't foresee any upsets until we get to the finals.
You think it's that clear? Well, I don't even remember which one is that we decided was the 2 seed.
It really doesn't matter.
Between Tucantinas and Camion in next week's matchup.
I don't think it matters.
Which one do you think is the clear favorite there?
I don't think it matters who wins that side.
Oh, okay, yeah.
This is the Eastern Conference Finals coming up next week.
Wait, okay. you put Tacos Chukis and Asadero in the same bracket?
No, Tacos Chukis is automatically advancing to the final. These are just the other side. So this actually is not the Eastern Conference Finals. This is more like the Eastern Conference Semifinals, I guess, in this particular scenario. Well, check back next week. We will return to Asadero, hopefully, to give it another try. I guess that's 2 weeks from now. We'll go to Asadero. But next week, when we have that Tucantinas versus...
Before the live show, though, we have to go to both of the locations because I feel like you have your gut instincts, but I want to have them pretty much back-to-back.
Yeah, we might have to do the same meal like I did for the dumplings.
Wow.
Look, it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. All right, let's turn our attention to sports. And I want to talk for a second here about a person known only as C in LA. I know you guys saw it because I sent it to you.
Yes.
The Deadspin story last week about this Reddit user who has been posting NBA scoops, was the first to report the Kevin Love extension that recently happened, Joel Embiid's extension last fall, Mike Budenholzer to become the Bucks head coach, and Marcus Smart's new contract. And all this would just be interesting and like kind of academic if not for the fact that this person is evidenced by their screen name, appears to be a Seattle native and a giant Seahawks fan who is regularly posting on r/Seahawks with analytical takes, including the limited value of running backs and also analytical basketball takes, all which led me to wonder.
Is it you?
Am I seeing LA? Am I secretly doing this? I'm pretty sure it's not me.
You were in LA this past week.
Oh, that is accurate.
I'm also pretty sure it's not Mina Kimes, was speculated in the Deadspin article. But see in LA, how are you not listening to this podcast?
That's what
calling out to him on this podcast will help get him
That's
to listen.
That's all you wanted to say.
You know, I'm hoping that gets back to him.
Yeah.
I want to know.
They posted about the limited value of running backs and analytical Seahawks takes. Are we sure it's not Ben B?
It could be Ben B. I mean, the LA connection is tough to find there.
He, I believe, was in California for a while.
That is true. He has been known to have been in California.
He's been outed as a Stanford fan.
Oh, wow.
There's a quick perusal of Google Maps will let you know that LA and Stanford is not in LA.
No, really? Is it?
Yeah.
But Ben B pointed out on Twitter, we learned that it was not him when he said that he had ultimately talked himself into the Rashad Penny pick.
Oh, man.
More on Rashad Penny later. But for now, it's time for...
Wait, I just love the idea that this is Mina Kimes, and she's so desperate to break stories and get, like, Reddit gold or whatever.
Yeah, she's not doing it for ESPN.
Yeah, she's not doing it for ESPN. She's learning about these signings and is going straight to Reddit. I mean, it seems like a very Reddit take because they would imagine the importance as being very high.
I suppose.
The people within R&BA
I think it was imagine that the
importance of R&BA is very great.
I think it's probably just that Mina is the only Seahawks fan they could think of in sports media.
In LA.
in LA. I mean, it does check out. Look, we're going to have Mina on the podcast soon, hopefully. So we'll confront her on it.
Interrogate her.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Extended.
I want answers.
Where were you on the night in question? We need an alibi. All right, it's time for your favorite segment. Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you. The Mariners have made all of us into a collective Michael Corleone in The Godfather Part 3. Just when we think we're out, they pull us back in. A week ago, when we were delivering these hot takes, the Mariners' playoff hopes were flatlining after 7 losses in 9 games, only for them to go to Houston and somehow sweep the defending champion Astros. Man, the Stros takes must be hot right now. Then, they lose their first 2 games in a crucial matchup in Oakland to fall 3.5 games back in the race for the second wild card, only to somehow shut out the A's through 12 innings on Wednesday and get a game-winning home run from D. Gordon, something that is only slightly more common than M's hot takes set to national anthems. That allows them to stay alive in the wild card hunt as they're coming back home to play the Dodgers. And as if all that isn't enough to give a Mariners fan whiplash, there's Felix's last week. He spent less time out of the rotation than Carmelo Anthony did with the Hawks. After being demoted over the weekend, Felix came in to relieve the injured James Paxton on Tuesday and threw 5 2/3 innings of 2-run ball. Now, he'll make at least Paxton's next start, the M's one-time ace, supplanting their current one. Look, we know how this movie ends. The Mariners are going to tease us by contending right up until the end of the season, the same way they did in 2014 and 2016. But, to mix similes, I'll be damned if we can change the channel yet.
All right. The Felix coming out of the bullpen to replace James Paxton. Wow, be still my heart. There was a lot of emotion happening there. It's like, I hope you're okay, James. And then Felix coming out of the pen, riding in on the white horse. All of a sudden, I mean, to have Felix Hernandez as your emergency starter is kind of an amazing situation to be in.
Not so amazing in terms of the cost of him as an emergency starter.
The cost or effectiveness. They'd be better off with Mike Leake out there. But it's still kind of amazing to see Felix coming out after James Paxton got hurt.
There were a lot of options for the M's hot takes this week. It could have been something Felix related, or also you wanted to go with Robinson Cano will lead the Mariners to the promised land, which I can't say has really happened through the first 2 games that Cano has been back.
He he's working his way back to leading the Mariners to the promised
land. I was workshopping a thing where, you know, I was going to be upset about Mariners fans for supporting Cano after the suspension. And
you were going to be mad at Mariners fans?
What?
To me, I feel like it's the other way around, where I'd be mad at Mariners fans for judging Cano in the first place.
Well, you understand that I often go from the perspective of, like, the traditional sports writer here when I'm doing the M's hot takes. So there was going to be a, should we cheer him? Cano.
God.
Just enjoy that taste of that one.
You made Katie sad.
Anything else on the Mariners?
The season just keeps going.
Sure does. Speaking of seasons that keep going, but in a positive way, the Seattle Sounders, with a 2-1 win last Sunday against FC Dallas, now improving their playoff odds all the way up to 67% in 538 Soccer Power Index, the highest they have been since the month of March when this seemingly interminable MLS season began. But it's been a fun ride for the Sounders. It continues another victory. I believe they're fifth in a row now.
The last five matches, W, 15 points.
Yeah, that's what they traditionally do in soccer. You see your like recent form with the last five matches, and yeah, all W's for the Sounders right now. And here's what's interesting. So they're still in eighth place in the Western Conference, still 3 points back of Real Salt Lake for the last playoff spot in the West with two matches in hand, I should say. But what's fascinating is now they're only 7 points out of third place, or second place in the Western Conference. Like, suddenly the Sounders could actually make some noise if they manage to keep up this hot streak that they're on.
I mean, I see no reason not to. Even if they sneak into the playoffs, given the most recent form, why they couldn't be a team that is competing again for the MLS Cup.
Now, they did probably get a little lucky to win this game last weekend to score both goals on set pieces. They got a Chad Marshall header off a corner and then a Nicola Ladero free kick for the winner that somehow bounced untouched into the goal despite like several people nearly getting ahead to it. Still, a win is a win. It was also interesting to see the debut by new left back Brad Smith, who arrived last Wednesday just after we recorded on a one-year loan from Bournemouth in the EPL with the option to recall him in January. But
that guy sounds like he's in the Red Hot Chili Peppers or something.
Brad Smith?
Yeah. Just, I feel like...
for some reason, this is the first time it's occurred to me that the Sounders back line now includes both Brad and Chad. So nice. I got that going for them. Smith playing ahead of Nuhu. You know, he gives you certainly a more reliable option, and anyone who can be on contract to an EPL team is inherently a star.
Brad Smith is obviously nothing if not reliable.
I would assume so. I don't know. He's got to be more reliable than Nuhu. Clint Dempsey missed the match due to lower back pain. Of course, he has not been in the lineup anyway lately, but was not even in the 18.
Wow.
This weekend, the Sounders will put their streak on the line and try to continue it against the rival LA Galaxy in a nationally televised match on ESPN this Saturday, and against their former manager, Ziggy Schmidt. The Galaxy are 5 points ahead in the standings, but the Sounders have two matches in hand against them. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the full-page ad, you're welcome, has in fact been tied for second in the MLS with 15 goals so far during his first season in the U.S., but... You know, the Galaxy are second to LAFC in goals scored per match amongst Western Conference teams, but middle of the pack in terms of goals allowed per match, which is why they have not exactly been, dominant despite the addition of Zlatan.
Huge match.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the time of year where somehow the Sounders turn it around every single season, where it goes from, oh my God, the MLS season is long, to MLS season is long.
Gives us a chance.
And this will be a fun one. I'm actually attending this match.
Are you?
Yeah. Scarves up.
Nice.
And the like.
I'm not sure what the like is. Over on the NWSL side, the Seattle Reign moving closer to clinching a playoff spot with a 1-0 win Saturday at the Utah Royals and then a scoreless draw at home against the Chicago Pride on Wednesday in a match that Megan Rapinoe missed due to hip soreness. The Reign, with those two results, now 5 points clear of Portland for second place in the NWSL table, and they can clinch a playoff spot this week if they get some help elsewhere, kind of a lot of help. More likely probably would happen next week for them to clinch. Speaking of potentially clinching, the Seattle Storm, now one win, or one Atlanta Dream loss away from the number one overall seed in the WNBA playoffs and home court advantage throughout the postseason. The Storm bouncing back from suffering their worst loss of the season last Thursday in Washington by a 177 final in a game that tipped at 8:30 a.m. Pacific, bright and early again on this road trip that featured multiple matinees. But the Storm coming back from that with an 81-72 win on Sunday against the reeling defending champion Minnesota Lynx to move within one game of the number one seed. They have most of this week off before returning home to finish up the schedule, the regular season, on Friday against the struggling New York Liberty. And then Sunday they'll host the equally struggling and trying to salvage a playoff spot, Dallas Wings. A win Friday would allow the Storm to rest their players potentially on Sunday, though may not be necessary because they'll have a week off before beginning the WNBA's semifinals round at home on August 26th.
So do they need, how do the playoffs work in the WNBA? They need to win one series to make it to the WNBA finals?
Yes, and they do.
How many games is that series?
Those are best of five. The semifinals and the finals are both best of five, and then the first two rounds are single elimination. So, you know, potentially a team will have to win two games to get to that matchup against the Storm in the semifinals.
So the Storm right now are three wins away from the WNBA finals.
Two wins away from, or yes, no, three wins away. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. That's exciting stuff. And like they've already advanced farther than they've gotten since the WNBA Finals in 2010. A fun fact is the Storm have never lost anywhere but the first round of the playoffs. Anytime they get out of the first round, they win the championship. So seems
they
like
skip the first round.
Yeah,
it's just like the Seahawks are the number one seed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very similar. The Storm will be playing those games in the semifinals at Key Arena. They will not, of course, be playing their next season as construction is scheduled to begin on the rebuild of Key Arena. And so the Storm will have to find a new home. And they announced on Wednesday that Alaska Airlines Arena at Heck Ed will be their, quote, primary home for the 2019 WNBA season. Lisa Brummel from the Storm ownership group 410 Sports told Jim Capel of The Athletic Seattle that a second arena could be necessary based on scheduling conflicts at UW. It's busy, of course, once you get towards the fall with both basketball teams and volleyball trying to practice at Heck Ed, and then football also. You know, you can't play opposite a football game on campus because of the traffic and everything. So, you know, Capel reported that Angel of the Wind Center in Everett is a possible second venue. I was really hoping for Showair in Kent myself, yes, because it would be very convenient to go to Asadero Prime right nearby.
That seems like a good enough reason.
Yeah.
Bring the Storm to Kent.
Also, do not want to have to drive all the way to Heck.
That's amazing.
That sounds horrible.
But the better solution, obviously, is to play at Heck Ed. So glad that the two sides were able to get this resolved, at least for most games next season. Speaking of UW, you mentioned this earlier. Five-star recruit Ali Cajo, who received his release from his NLI from UW shortly after the start of fall practice, landed last weekend at Alabama, which does not seem to be much closer to his home of Reno, and may have given him a little too much slack, or at least the explanation that we were provided for his departure from UW in last week's podcast, and I regret the error.
Oh, wow. A shocking Peltoncast apology.
Yeah. Nick Saban told reporters that Cajo wasn't able to get into UW. He wasn't able to practice with the team over the summer for academic reasons, and, you know, potentially whatever credits he was missing was unable to make up or replace.
And that's the perfect type of Alabama player.
Adam Jude of the Seattle Times, who broke that story originally that he was leaving UW, reported that a last language class was what prevented Cajo from enrolling. Do we have some thoughts here?
I mean, yes, but first and foremost, like, I'm in support of players having the freedom to do what is best for them. But
why are you gritting your teeth when you say that?
This situation is just all sorts of shady and odd, and it doesn't make sense.
It's really kind of complicated, because if it weren't for the various stories around, yes, Ali Cajo, it'd be really different, because, I mean, I think in general, we all support the player's right to choose. I think players should be able to play wherever they want for as long as they want. Well, not for as long as they want, but they should be able to play 1 year at one school, and if for some reason it's not working out there, they should be able to go to another school for the next season.
I'm trying to think of who UW could have if players could play as long as they want.
Sonny Sixkiller.
I don't think he would be that helpful, I gotta say. Maybe Jake Locker would come back.
Oh,
like, I feel
man.
Like he didn't enjoy the NFL that much, but no. I bet he would enjoy it. First off, we're kind of short on Jakes at quarterback.
You need so. Gonna have to kick out the non-Jake. So
yeah,
I tell you, people were concerned about Josh Rosen's commitment to the game. I don't know how that would work out for Jake Locker.
He just didn't want to play in Tennessee. He wanted to be back home in the Northwest. It was where he belonged.
But the real issue here is the reporting surrounding the story. Because if it was that he didn't get into UW, then there's really no story. He just didn't get in.
And it's not like that should be like a shameful thing that needs to be covered up. Like,
the shameful thing should be the low standards of Alabama.
That's fair. Yeah.
Does that mean that they don't need a language credit to get into Alabama?
There's only one language that they speak in Alabama.
That's football.
Saban. That's Sabanese. Money.
I like the football answer. I really just meant that the people of Alabama were not that concerned with learning foreign languages.
You know,
that's not fair.
I don't think
over generalizing the education of the fine people from Alabama. Sorry to all of our Alabaman listeners.
Oh boy. I mean, look, every university has different standards for what is required. And, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's wrap it up by talking about the Seahawks, who opened the preseason last Thursday, losing to the Indianapolis Colts despite a fluke late touchdown, a freak late touchdown? I don't know how you want to describe it, that I missed because I had turned the game off at that point. I was like, this is over. I missed the most exciting play of the game.
Various neighbors were way too excited about this touchdown. There was like an uproar of cheering, and I was like, what happened? I'd like walked outside to do something, and there's so much cheering, and I was like, it's still a preseason touchdown.
Yes, like, and didn't even win the game. So
even if it had, it would not have mattered. It's like, let's be cool here.
People were excited about that, what, six games preseason winning streak the Seahawks had going?
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, that matters.
Well, what does matter from this game, rookie tackle Jamarco Jones suffering a high ankle sprain plus additional ligament damage when he got rolled up on. What sounds like he's going to be out a while.
Pretty serious ankle. What was the term?
Ankle plus.
No. What did Pete say about it, though? He's got a pretty something ankle.
Oh, yeah.
And Pete Carroll speak.
I think serious might have been it.
Pretty serious ankle.
Yeah. Not from this game, but also notable is an injury to a Seahawks rookie. The aforementioned first-round pick, Rashad Penny, suffered a broken index finger at the end of practice Monday, underwent surgery Wednesday morning, and is expected out 3 to 4 weeks, which would put him right on the borderline of being able to return for the Seahawks season opener 3.5 weeks from that surgery. So, certainly, you know, I don't know that this makes a big deal in terms of wins and losses for the Seahawks, but it's certainly disappointing in terms of Penny's chances to get game reps and experience in the preseason. He had the most carries of anyone in this game, 8 carries for 16 yards, but it seemed like Chris Carson...
It was a classic Seahawks 2017 performance.
It was. By the way, did you see that Thomas Rawls had 8 carries for 12 yards?
You know, I was like, sorry, Thomas. That injury may have ruined him in his rookie season.
Still running behind the Seahawks offensive line, apparently. But Chris Carson, with 4 carries for 26 yards, running with the first unit, seemed to solidify his hold on that starting job.
These are such small sample sizes, right? I mean, these are the smallest sample sizes you can almost get, and they're in a preseason game. But is there any decision that looks more wrong right now than drafting a running back in the first round? We knew it at the time. And now, it's been how many months? 4 months or something? And it still looks like such a bad decision. I mean, the arguments of like drafting a running back in the first round gives the Seahawks depth at running back. It's like they could have drafted a running back in the third or fourth or fifth round to have also done that. They could have signed a running back to have done that. They could have used J.D. McKissick as running back depth.
You know, I'm excited.
They have a 7th round running back from the previous season who is clearly better than Rashad Penny in almost every capacity, who was the only good running back on the Seahawks roster last year, and they decided to draft a running back in the first round. And what do we know about rookie running backs? Or what do we know about running backs in general, right? It's that their careers are short.
Yes.
And for rookie running backs, you need to get as much out of a running back when they're a rookie. You don't throw away seasons like you would with a quarterback or a wide receiver. You need to get everything out of those running backs immediately.
I mean, look, there's going to be opportunity for multiple guys to play. Penny's going to get his chance over the course of this season.
To run for 2 yards per carry?
I'm excited to see CJ Procise this weekend.
Another option at running back.
Yes. Any other takeaways from the preseason opener?
I was curious if it changed your collective mind about the long-term outlook for the Seahawks.
Seasonally? I mean, I would say that I was encouraged by how much play action they ran and how much they threw the ball with the first team offense on the field, because I was expecting a lot more running from Brian Schottenheimer the way he was talking. I mean, maybe this is all real long gone.
That'd be great. That would be...
They're actually going to come out and wing it around 50 times a game.
Make a movie about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one preseason game. I don't know. I thought the offensive line looked good.
Yeah, that was encouraging.
I mean, really, the first team offense looked very good in general.
Yep.
There's nothing that you didn't like out of what Russell Wilson did with that first team offense. Chris Carson looks good. The receivers weren't an issue. I mean, I think in general, the takeaway is that I think the offense, should the offensive line hold up, and I'm going to giant knock on wood here, I think that the offense will be pretty good this year.
I want to also add the caveat that this is a long con by Brian Schottenheimer, and he's not planning to run like 45 times a game, because I can't rule that out.
Other takeaways, thought Will Disley looked really good.
Yeah.
I mean, this draft by the Seahawks could be, they're positioned to have a lot of players from this draft who could make an impact very quickly. And then also Rashad Penny.
Such a hater. You hate the Rashad Penny pick more, I think, maybe even than Ben Bear?
No.
Is there a fan group for Will Disley fans yet? Is there like a hashtag?
You got to think, what rhymes with thrill?
Will rhymes with thrill.
I know that.
The Thrillers? I don't know.
The Thrillers is not a bad start. We can continue workshopping.
Okay.
Okay. But I mean, already one of my favorite players on the team. Love Thrill Disley. And also, Shaquem Griffin being out there all over the place. Give this man a starting job.
You honestly think that?
Oh, yeah. Third linebacker, Shaquem Griffin. I mean, he's not going to be in there necessarily on that many plays as a third linebacker. But, like, Shaquem Griffin has proven over and over and over again that he has an innate ability to be where the play is happening.
Yeah, that's probably true, unless he's gotten pushed out of position by Jack Doyle.
Wait, how many times did that happen? Once?
It did happen once, yes.
Jack Doyle is like a three- or five-year tight end, professional tight end. This is Shaquem Griffin's first ever game.
I know. I'm just not ready to make him the starter yet. Call me crazy. I am surprised we've talked about this many rookies and not talked about Rashim Green.
Rashim Green!
Like, the thing I never understood about Rashim Green, I can't remember if I actually said this in our post-draft coverage. Like, everyone talked about, oh, he's such a project. Like, really, he's going to need several years to develop. Like, he was really productive last year at USC. Did everyone think he was just getting lucky sacks all the time? I mean, I don't know, maybe the Pac-12 offensive lines, maybe that's possible. But, like, the commentary, like, the tone of the Rashim Green commentary.
Is it Rashim or Rasheen?
It's got an M.
Okay, Rashim Green. Okay.
It never matched his actual production at USC, in my opinion. Or
always
at least
underrated. Perfect Seahawks player.
And then we have gotten this far without talking about the hero, oh, no. The star of last Thursday night's game, Michael Dixon. We finally got to see him in action, and it was everything we hoped and dreamed from his punting.
There was, who's the guy who does the post-game shows, a former Seahawk, he might have a goatee?
Dave Wyman.
Dave Wyman. And there was some Dave Wyman poo-pooing of Michael Dixon, being like, oh, you can't outkick your coverage like that. And I'm like, I understand you probably know John Ryan, you like John Ryan, we all do. Look, he's going to bring baseball to Portland. We love John Ryan, but like,
I mean, I think Russell's bringing baseball to Portland. John Ryan's just brought baseball to the Portland area.
He's already in Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Michael Dixon's turn. I mean, come on here. Like, we don't need to be standing for John Ryan anymore. We can just be perfectly in love with Michael Dixon.
Yeah.
Shaquem Griffin's out there. There's no need to worry about outkicking the coverage. He will be making those tackles downfield.
Shouldn't we be in love with the competition?
Oh, there it is.
Wow. Thanks, Pete.
Love a good competition.
How do you guys feel about the backup quarterback competition for the Seahawks right now? On a scale of 1-2, Colin Kaepernick needs to settle that collusion case.
I'm a Magoo fan.
Are you?
I like Magoo. I thought he did some things out there.
Did he?
I mean, Austin Davis didn't look bad until that awful interception that he had.
Yes. He completed a high percentage of his passes.
Austin Davis is a perfectly capable backup quarterback.
I don't know if I'd go that far. He's perhaps cromulent. All right, the other bit of roster news for the Seahawks from the past week that they have, I think this move is still not official as we record, but by all accounts, we'll sign linebacker Eric Walden, who had 4 sacks and 581 snaps last season in Tennessee. The previous year, he had 11 sacks and 760 snaps in Indianapolis. That year, kind of an outlier, just one other season in his career with more than 4 sacks. It's interesting to the extent that Walden has almost exclusively played outside linebacker in 3-4 defenses throughout his career. So the move to playing defensive end in a 4-3 alignment as he would for the Seahawks will be a bit of an adjustment. But clearly, despite how well Rasheem Green played, rush end a position of need for the Seahawks with Geon Jordan's return in question and Tristan already ruling him out for the season.
I mean, he's going to be out for a number of games. Pass rush is going to be an issue. That's why this Rasheem Green game that he had is huge. I mean, there's no real kind of silver bullet to the pass rush right now. Who's the Seahawks' best pass rusher at the moment?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's Frank Clark. But
oh, yeah. Who's their second best?
Who's the Seahawks' second best pass rusher at the moment?
Might be Rasheem Green.
I mean, you're talking about one of the tackles, maybe. Like, it's that, or it's just Rasheem Green. I mean, the best healthy pass rusher.
Yeah.
By the way, some other takeaways. Did we see this Jimmy Graham touchdown for the Packers today?
I did not, but I heard about it.
That was pretty nice. Aaron Rodgers to Jimmy Graham in the red zone. That's pretty natural connection. They looked really comfortable with each other. The thing that's crazy about the Seahawks.
It didn't take them 3 seasons to figure that out.
They managed to figure out to throw the ball to Jimmy Graham in the red zone just right away, preseason game number 2. The thing that's amazing about this offseason is I'd actually forgotten that the Seahawks didn't re-sign Jimmy Graham. Like, it was so far down on the list of things that happened. It was just like, oh, yeah, that happened too.
Yeah, perhaps you get a reminder at the live show.
Wait, what's going to happen at the live show?
Is Jimmy Graham going to be at the live show?
Jimmy Graham's not going to be at the live show. He's not going to be throwing out any food at the live show, sadly.
Teasing that Jimmy Graham's
going to
be there.
I just meant that we were going to recap the offseason.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So who's the Seahawks' second best pass rusher? Who'd you come up with?
I think it might be Rasheem Green. Yeah, I think I'm going with that. I guess Barkevious Mingo, maybe.
I mean, that's what we're looking at. It's players like Mingo who've never been a consistently successful pass rusher despite their pedigree.
I mean, the other answer, the reason you're caveating it with when healthy is Geon Jordan, who had, like, well, yes. What, 3 good games last year?
I mean, that's the other player that's where we're that counting on, right? As somebody who's out of the NFL not that long ago.
Yeah. I mean, it was never for lack of talent, but in terms of, I wouldn't say proven.
No. I mean, they're both, Mingo and Deion Jordan are both pedigree guys. Like, Deion Jordan never had a good NFL season, did he, aside from last year?
No. He didn't even have a decent NFL season.
This is the pass rusher that we're counting on.
Yeah.
Look, we better be hoping that Rasheem Green looks good again next week, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I agree.
All right.
Okay. Well, we will see the Seahawks back in action this weekend as they take on the LA Chargers. Yeah. Well,
you're very muted about this whole thing. Yeah.
I don't know what else to say there. Except on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Thank you.